David Graham, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science news. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So we're here in Chicago, and I know you'll have lots of stories to talk about in the next few days on the Science Podcast, but what are some of the stories that you've been covering for Science Now from this past week?
Well, it's good to be here with you at the AAAS meeting, Rob. And as always, I've got three Science Now stories for you before we start getting into the meeting podcast. And the stories we're going to be talking about today are how to keep robots from getting stuck in the sand, how ants talk, and finally, how colors influence our concentration and our creativity.
Great. Well, let's start with how to keep robots from getting stuck in the sand. I suppose this would be pretty important for, say, the Mars rover.
Exactly. And even for people who drive over sand regularly, if you're driving over very loose sand, even vehicles that are built for this kind of thing can sometimes get stuck. And the problem is that as vehicles come in contact with the sand, if they move their wheels or whatever other appendages they might have too quickly, they essentially dig themselves a hole and they can get stuck in the sand. And they can prevent this from happening by moving very slowly over the sand, which prevents them from digging a hole, but they also take forever to get to where they want to go. So researchers thinking about future planetary rovers and just about how we can improve locomotion on sand here on Earth looked at desert creatures. They looked at lizards and cockroaches specifically, and they said, how do these guys keep from getting stuck in the sand?
What's the key? How do cockroaches and lizards do it?
Well, it turns out they use a combination of fast and slow motion. When their feet are in contact with the sand, they move relatively slowly to keep from digging themselves into a hole. But when their feet aren't in contact with the sand, in other words, when they're going through that motion of having lifted up from the sand and are about to touch the sand again, that's a very rapid motion. So they're returning back to the sand as quickly as possible, but while they're in the sand or while their feet are in the sand, they're moving very slowly.
So this is an insight for new robots that don't use wheels.
Right. And in fact, based on these observations of these desert creatures, the researchers designed a robot called Sandbot, which doesn't have wheels. As you said, it has these sort of elfin-like feet, you know, with a long foot and almost kind of curved up a little bit at the end. And what this robot does is, much like the cockroaches and lizards, when its feet are in contact with the sand, they move very slowly. But as they rotate around this wheel-like axis to reach their next point of contact in the sand, they go very quickly. And you can actually see a very cool video of this on the site. And what the researchers were able to accomplish after a year of tweaking this robot was they were able to get it to move about 15 times faster over loose sand than the Mars rovers currently do.
Is that going to be useful to NASA and planetary explorers?
Well, the team hopes it's going to be useful for any future explorers that are going to need to traverse sandy terrain and that are especially going to need to traverse it very quickly. But one expert points out that the current Mars rovers actually don't need to move very fast. They're looking at parts of the surface and they're going over these parts in very close detail. And so they don't want to go over these parts too fast. So this technology wouldn't be terribly useful for today's Mars rovers, but potentially for future Mars rovers or even for rovers that go to the moon or other places.
Well, from how a new robot walks to new discoveries about how ants talk, what kind of sounds are they making?
Well, Rob, researchers have known for a long time that ants make these chirping-like noises. And here's what a queen ant sounds like.
How do they make that sound?
Well, they make the sound by scraping a tiny guitar pick-like appendage on their abdomen against grooved ridges on their posterior. So think a wooden spoon scraping against a washboard. But researchers have always thought that these sounds are not really for communication. They're not really the ants talking so much as they probably just serve as an alarm call or something like that. And that's because researchers thought that most ant communication occurred via molecules that the ants emit. And it's sort of like they smell each other's molecules. And this helps them determine, say, whether the queen needs food or whether they need to go to the surface and protect the colony. So researchers didn't think ants had much use for sound communication. But that all changed with this study. A team of researchers looked at a species of ant called Myrmica schenkii, and they used these tiny little recording devices to get up close to the ants and record their sounds. And what they found was that the queen ants make different sounds than the worker ants. And that made sense because the grooves on the queen ants are actually wider spaced than those on the worker ants. And the fact that these different castes of ants are making different type sounds indicates that this audio communication is more complicated than researchers had been giving the ants credit for. And in fact, when they played back some of the queen's sounds to the worker ants, and they played back these sounds on these tiny little speakers, the workers crowded around the speakers, protecting them, as if they thought that the speakers were actually the queen and the queen was in danger. So this was further evidence that these sounds have specific meanings.
So they use both sound and these chemicals to help distinguish the different castes of ants?
Exactly. And what was also really cool, what the researchers found, was that caterpillars have learned to mimic these scents and sounds to gain access and privileges in the ant colony. Now, the researchers already knew that caterpillars could mimic the ant scent, but now they found out that the caterpillar also mimics the sound. They again use these recording devices, and they found that once inside the colony, the caterpillar makes a noise very similar to that made by the queen ant. And this gets the ants to start giving the caterpillar food and basically just giving the caterpillar the royal treatment. And so the cool thing about this story is not only finding out that ants talk and that this communication is a lot more complicated than we thought, but they've also found that there's creatures out there that have learned to mimic these noises to get what they want from the ant colony.
A parasitic relationship, then.
Exactly. And it's really cool because this is the first time this type of mimicry has ever been seen.
Well, from how caterpillars can influence ants by mimicking their sounds and smells, to how colors can influence us and our concentration and creativity. What's an example here?
Well, Rob, say, for instance, you're in a room and all the walls have been painted red. Researchers have shown in some studies in the past that that color red will help you concentrate better. So if, say, you're an accountant and you're working in a red room, maybe your calculations will be more accurate than, say, if you were working in a white room or a blue room. But these studies haven't been very clear-cut in the past. Some studies have suggested that red helps concentration and cognition, while other studies have even suggested that red hurts cognition. So a team of researchers suspected maybe these studies are testing different types of cognition, and maybe red helps some types of cognition but hurts other types of cognition. So let's try to be as specific as we can in this study. And what they did was they gathered a group of volunteers and they had them stare at computer screens. And sometimes the screen had a red background and sometimes it had a blue background. And the reason they chose blue is because there had also been some studies suggesting that blue might enhance creativity. So they wanted to test both cognition and creativity. And they asked the volunteers to do a variety of tasks while they looked at these different color screens. And in the concentration task, or the cognition task, the color of the screen could be red or white or even blue. And the volunteers were asked to proofread a list of addresses. So in other words, a task that would require a lot of concentration. And they found that when the screens were red, the volunteers did better on the task than when the screen was blue or white. So this was evidence that red does enhance this type of cognition, especially this type of sort of concentration cognition. And in another task, they looked at the color blue. And the researchers asked in this study the volunteers to come up with as many uses for a brick as possible. And they varied the color of the screen from blue to other colors. And some of the more creative responses were, you could use a brick as a scratching post for animals. And the researchers found that the more creative responses tended to come when the screen was blue than it was when the screen was other colors. So this was evidence that blue is linked to creativity.
Do researchers have any idea why red is more associated with concentration and blue more associated with creative tasks?
Well, they suspect it has to do with the connotations of these colors. Red, for example, is associated with stop signs, with red ink, and even with blood. So the color red might subliminally make us sort of stop and sort of think about something more or approach something more cautiously, which would lend itself to greater concentration.
Especially blood.
But blue, people tend to associate with more tranquil things like the sea or the sky. And so if you're seeing blue, maybe your mind is sort of in a more relaxed state where you're thinking more creatively.
I suppose we'll start seeing a whole new line of advertising based on this kind of result.
Well, that's an interesting point. And actually, in the study, the researchers also showed the volunteers camera ads. And in one ad, there was a picture of a camera, and along with the picture, all the different features and the accessories that the camera had, and that was all in a red background. And the volunteers tended to respond better to that ad when it was on a red background. And the researchers suspect, but maybe that's because there's so much going on in that picture and so much sort of technology going on in that picture, that the volunteers processed it better when it had this red background that was sort of activating maybe the cognitive or the concentration parts of their brain. And when they did a camera ad on a blue background, and this time the ad had more sort of a creative feel to it. It was sort of the types of pictures you could take and the landscape pictures and, you know, the portrait pictures and things like that. The volunteers had a better response to that when it was on a blue background than if it was on a different color background. So the idea is that advertisers could also learn a lot from a study like this because they might be able to target their ads better if they use different types of colors.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what can we look forward to seeing online on the Science Now site and the Science Policy Blog site during the AAAS meeting?
Well, Rob, during the meeting, we're going to be covering the meeting with our findings blog, and you can find a link to this on the Science Now main page. And every day, we're going to be posting a few entries about various sessions at the meeting, what new science is coming out of the meetings. We're going to be talking to some of the personalities that are there and just overall presenting readers with a lot of fun facts and fun anecdotes from the meeting, just to give people who aren't at the meeting a nice flavor for what's going on. And we'll be posting links to all the podcasts that you're going to be doing from the meeting, Rob.
You will.
Of course.
Great. Thanks.
And we'll also be running the Science Policy Blog, Science Insider, during the meeting. And the blog is continuing to follow a lot of important developments, such as this big economic stimulus package that's happening in the United States, which science agencies are going to be getting what, and also looking at some of the ethical issues in science. Will President Obama be reversing former President Bush's order that limited the number of stem cell lines that researchers in the United States could use? So be sure to check out the Science Now site for a findings blog, and also remember to check out the policy blog.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus frequent blog updates on the AAAS annual meeting in Chicago, Illinois, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.